Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szöveg értése emelt szint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on the CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There will be three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The tasks will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD, in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After that, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is exactly 30 minutes long. Good luck!
Listen.
Task 1. In this section, you will hear a woman talk about her favorite singer. Your task is to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know, because the text does not say, and write the appropriate letter in the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true, write B if the statement is false, and write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. After that, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. A means true, B means false, C means the text does not say. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
We are a little crazy.
My favorite singer? Definitely Seal. When I first heard his song Crazy years and years ago, when I first heard his rich, honeyed baritone, I thought this guy must have had a happy childhood. Then I did a bit of reading to test my theory. It turned out that my guess was way off the mark. Seal was born in London to a Nigerian mother and Brazilian father and was immediately placed with foster parents in Essex. He returned to his biological family, including a strict, physically abusive father, when he was four. The first inklings of a musical career came when he found himself singing at a school concert, aged 11. Let me quote what he said about it. "My parents had never heard me sing before. There wasn't a great deal of communication in the house. There was this really cool teacher who I idolized. I certainly didn't idolize my father. And he always used to say, "You've got a really good voice." And I would never really take his word for it, but he got me to sing on stage. I remember closing my eyes and singing, and at the end of it, everyone was clapping. And I opened my eyes, and there was a look of disbelief on my parents' faces. And at that point, I knew what I wanted to do. Sometime before his father's death, when Seal was 17, he had chosen homelessness rather than stay with his family. He put himself through an architecture course while living in empty buildings and sleeping rough. When he was 23, a girlfriend heard him sing for the first time and immediately bought him a bass guitar and a drum machine. She said, "That's what you should be doing." He began making demos, but the record company didn't offer him a contract. Seal himself felt he had no identity. He could sing, but he didn't have his own voice. Then a friend introduced him to the music of Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Suddenly, he understood what he lacked and stopped writing music for a year. He listened to everything those artists had done. And the very first song he wrote after his year of research was Crazy, which won him a number of awards. And, by sheer chance, it happens to be my favourite song.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
My favorite singer? Definitely Seal. When I first heard his song Crazy years and years ago, when I first heard his rich, honeyed baritone, I thought this guy must have had a happy childhood. Then I did a bit of reading to test my theory. It turned out that my guess was way off the mark. Seal was born in London to a Nigerian mother and Brazilian father and was immediately placed with foster parents in Essex. He returned to his biological family, including a strict, physically abusive father, when he was four. The first inklings of a musical career came when he found himself singing at a school concert, aged 11. Let me quote what he said about it. "My parents had never heard me sing before. There wasn't a great deal of communication in the house. There was this really cool teacher who I idolized. I certainly didn't idolize my father. And he always used to say, 'You've got a really good voice.' And I would never really take his word for it. But he got me to sing on stage. I remember closing my eyes and singing. And at the end of it, everyone was clapping. And I opened my eyes and there was a look of disbelief on my parents' faces. And at that point, I knew what I wanted to do. Sometime before his father's death, when Seal was 17, he had chosen homelessness rather than stay with his family. He put himself through an architecture course while living in empty buildings and sleeping rough. When he was 23, a girlfriend heard him sing for the first time and immediately bought him a bass guitar and a drum machine. She said, "That's what you should be doing." He began making demos, but the record company didn't offer him a contract. Seal himself felt he had no identity. He could sing, but he didn't have his own voice. Then a friend introduced him to the music of Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Suddenly, he understood what he lacked and stopped writing music for a year. He listened to everything those artists had done. And the very first song he wrote after his year of research was Crazy, which won him a number of awards. And, by sheer chance, It happens to be my favourite song.
That is the end of task one. Task two. In this section, you will hear a radio interview with Howard Henley, who has 43 presidential statues on his property in Virginia, U.S. Your task is to circle the letter or letters of the correct answer or answers in the boxes on the right. Please note that in this task, both answers may be correct. However, there is always at least one correct answer. This means you will have to circle one or two letters. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. After that, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Washington,
Adams,
Jefferson,
Madison,
Monroe,
Adams,
the second guy's son,
Jackson,
Van Buren,
then there's Harrison,
died in a month,
didn't get much done,
Tyler,
James Polk,
Taylor,
Fillmore,
first name Millard.
Hello and good morning. You're listening to 102.1 Radio Bridge. Yesterday, I bought the local newspaper, and its front page headline was How 43 Giant Crumbling Presidential Heads Ended Up in a Virginia Field. I found out that Howard Henley is the owner of the land where these giant busts, the head and shoulders of our presidents, are. He is here with me today in the studio. Howard, thank you very much for accepting our invitation.
Thanks for having me.
Presidential heads falling to pieces, what does that mean?
Well, unfortunately, these 6-meter-tall busts have damaged noses. Tear-like stains fall from the eyes, and all have broken heads. They are literally falling to pieces, bit by bit. This could be a scene from the world's most patriotic horror movie. The whole story is like a dream turning into a horrible nightmare.
Well then, let's start with the dream part, shall we?
Virginia's President's Park Open-Air Museum first opened in 2004. It was the brainchild of a local landowner and a Houston sculptor who was inspired to create the giant busts after driving past Mount Rushmore National Memorial in South Dakota. Unfortunately, however, the park, which cost about $10 million to create, soon lost all its money due to a lack of visitors. I believe the main reason for that was that the park was hidden behind a motel and too far away from other tourist attractions. So the park went out of business in 2010.
What happened to the presidential heads?
The landowner wanted to destroy the busts. However, I didn't feel right about it, since I had helped build the park and loved the statues. I offered to take the heads and move them to my farm.
When does the nightmare part come?
Now, each presidential head weighed about 8,000 kilograms and had to be lifted from its base by a crane, which resulted in breaking the sculpture's neck to get the full piece off the ground. Also, we had to smash a hole into the top of each sculpture's head in order to attach the crane to the steel frame inside the busts. Then, each president was put on a flatbed truck and driven to my property. And the broken skulls were just the beginning. We had never transported statues before, so we had to improvise as we went along. The first few busts suffered the most due to our inexperience. On top of everything, my field isn't officially open to visitors as I have no tourist attraction license. I have to turn away requests to visit my property.
So, is this the end of the story?
I hope not. I'm working with a number of local governments to find a good place to rebuild the museum. I'd like to recreate the original President's Park model, which included a visitor center with presidential memorabilia and a recreation of the Oval Office. I'd like to complete it with an old Air Force One airplane, a Secret Service museum, and some First Lady memorabilia.
Howard Henley, good luck to your ambitious plans.
Thank you.
Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, 1 through 45.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Washington,
Adams,
Jefferson,
Madison,
Monroe,
Adams,
the second guy's son,
Jackson,
Van Buren,
then there's Harrison,
died in a month,
didn't get much done,
Tyler,
James,
Paul, Taylor,
Fillmore,
first name Millard.
Hello and good morning. You're listening to 102.1 Radio Bridge. Yesterday, I bought the local newspaper and its front page headline was How 43 Giant Crumbling Presidential Heads Ended Up in a Virginia Field. I found out that Howard Henley is the owner of the land where these giant busts, the head and shoulders of our presidents, are. He is here with me today in the studio. Howard, thank you very much for accepting our invitation.
Thanks for having me.
Presidential heads falling to pieces. What does that mean?
Well, unfortunately, these 6 meter tall busts have damaged noses. Tear-like stains fall from the eyes, and all have broken heads. They are literally falling to pieces, bit by bit. This could be a scene from the world's most patriotic horror movie. The whole story is like a dream turning into a horrible nightmare.
Well then, let's start with the dream part, shall we?
Virginia's President's Park Open-Air Museum first opened in 2004. It was the brainchild of a local landowner and a Houston sculptor who was inspired to create the giant busts after driving past Mount Rushmore National Memorial in South Dakota. Unfortunately, however, the park, which cost about $10 million to create, soon lost all its money due to a lack of visitors. I believe the main reason for that was that the park was hidden behind a motel and too far away from other tourist attractions. So the park went out of business in 2010.
What happened to the presidential heads?
The landowner wanted to destroy the busts. However, I didn't feel right about it since I had helped build the park and loved the statues. I offered to take the heads and move them to my farm.
When does the nightmare part come?
Now, each presidential head weighed about 8,000 kilograms and had to be lifted from its base by a crane, which resulted in breaking the sculpture's neck to get the full piece off the ground. Also, we had to smash a hole into the top of each sculpture's head in order to attach the crane to the steel frame inside the busts. Then, each president was put on a flatbed truck and driven to my property. and the broken skulls were just the beginning. We had never transported statues before, so we had to improvise as we went along. The first few busts suffered the most due to our inexperience. On top of everything, my field isn't officially open to visitors as I have no tourist attraction license. I have to turn away requests to visit my property.
So, is this the end of the story?
I hope not. I'm working with a number of local governments to find a good place to rebuild the museum. I'd like to recreate the original President's Park model, which included a visitor center with presidential memorabilia and a recreation of the Oval Office. I'd like to complete it with an old Air Force One airplane, a Secret Service museum, and some First Lady memorabilia.
Howard Henley, good luck to your ambitious plans.
Thank you.
Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, 1 through 45.
That is the end of task two. Task three. In this section, you will hear some information about an efficient method called Dutch reach. Your task will be to complete the sentences with two words or numbers in each sentence. Please use the exact words that you hear in the recording. First, you will have some time to study the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. After that, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Most of us are familiar with the term Dutch treat, which means that in a restaurant or in a pub, each participant in a group pays for their share of the expenses. Fewer people know the term Dutch courage, which is the false confidence that a person gets from drinking alcohol. But whoever heard of the term Dutch reach? It's no euphemism, but the name of a simple technique to open the door of a car in a much safer way. If it was widely adopted by motorists in the UK, it could save dozens of people every year. Originating some 50 years ago in the Netherlands, the Dutch reach is a method of opening a car door with the hand furthest from the door handle. This means motorists are forced to turn their body towards the door, allowing them the opportunity to look over their shoulder in order to force them to see whether a cyclist or motorcyclist is coming. In the Netherlands, Dutch reach is taught to children both in school and by their parents, as well as being a required section of the driving test. In the United Kingdom, the method of Dutch reach has become a central issue to groups campaigning to put an end to dooring, the rather literal name that describes when a cyclist is knocked off their bike by an opening car door. Dooring received a lot of media attention in 2016, thanks to a careless British Conservative Party politician who was the Secretary of State for Transport. He sent a 35-year-old cyclist flying when he got out of his ministerial car without looking. In 2015 alone, dooring was responsible for 474 accidents across the UK. Cycling UK, which is a charitable organisation supporting cyclists, is keen for the Dutch Reach to be part of a campaign to put pressure on Cycling Minister Andrew Jones to help promote it, as well as to include it in driving tests. They believe that by this relatively simple measure, the lives of dozens of people will be saved.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Most of us are familiar with the term Dutch treat, which means that in a restaurant or in a pub, each participant in a group pays for their share of the expenses. Fewer people know the term Dutch courage, which is the false confidence that a person gets from drinking alcohol. But whoever heard of the term Dutch reach? It's no euphemism, but the name of a simple technique to open the door of a car in a much safer way. If it was widely adopted by motorists in the UK, it could save dozens of people every year. Originating some 50 years ago in the Netherlands, the Dutch reach is a method of opening a car door with the hand furthest from the door handle. This means motorists are forced to turn their body towards the door, allowing them the opportunity to look over their shoulder in order to force them to see whether a cyclist or motorcyclist is coming. In the Netherlands, Dutch reach is taught to children both in school and by their parents, as well as being a required section of the driving test. In the United Kingdom, the method of Dutch reach has become a central issue to groups campaigning to put an end to dooring, the rather literal name that describes when a cyclist is knocked off their bike by an opening car door. Dooring received a lot of media attention in 2016, thanks to a careless British Conservative Party politician who was the Secretary of State for Transport. He sent a 35-year-old cyclist flying when he got out of his ministerial car without looking. In 2015 alone, dooring was responsible for 474 accidents across the UK. Cycling UK, which is a charitable organisation supporting cyclists, is keen for the Dutch Reach to be part of a campaign to put pressure on Cycling Minister Andrew Jones to help promote it, as well as to include it in driving tests. They believe that by this relatively simple measure, the lives of dozens of people will be saved.
That is the end of Task 3, and also the end of the listening exam.